I'm Sarah Marshall. I've worked with some of the world's leading brands to drive business growth. And now I'm sharing my knowledge and expertise with you. In my podcast, Lessons from the Boardroom, I talk to other successful leaders to find out how they've perfected their craft, driven success, and dealt with the challenges that leadership brings. So come on, dive in. Welcome to Lessons from the Boardroom, the podcast version. Today, I am delighted to introduce Ed Parker to you. Ed is the founder and MD of Fido Search, and Ed is pretty much an all-round fabulous person. How long have I known you now? Ed
and it must be 11 years. 11 years.
11 years.
I had hair back then, Sarah.
You did. You did, but you look exactly the same apart from the hair. You've still got that beaming smile, happy face. Anyway, Ed is here to talk about his journey as a leader. And Ed, to start with, would you mind telling us how you got to where you are today and a little bit about Fido's?
Yeah, happily, actually. And thanks for welcoming me in, Sarah. It's really good to chat. So I started off, like many, had a sport, had an interest. I lived abroad. I grew up in Germany. I spent 4 or 5 years there when I was between the age of 5 and nearly 10, and didn't really know what I wanted career-wise. Went off to uni, used the German, studied that, but got to work abroad as a result. So I actually worked for one of the banks in Germany, decided I didn't want to be a banker, completed my studies back in England at Sheffield, and then needed to find a job. So I went down the route, first of all, of finding a really good graduate job. And then I fell into recruitment. And at that time, it was pre-financial crisis. There was so much opportunity. It was almost like it was really good fun and a great way to learn sales. But I didn't take it seriously. I just thought this would be a sort of a moment in time, a year, maybe two. But actually, the financial crisis came. It was really difficult. And I fell in love with the industry because I found other ways to do the things that I really wanted to do. And then as the market improved and we came out of that financial crisis, some of the things that I really enjoyed doing became really important and useful. Some of the clients that I was working with, and you know, that's where I sort of evolved over a period of time into doing what I do now, which is a mixture of consultancy work, so helping clients make strategic decisions
about their recruitment,
doing due diligence about their recruitment, their growth, their strategy, trying to make data-led decisions around how to grow and how to invest, and then thinking about things like the cost to entry. And putting in strategies to deliver on those outcomes. But it's actually through the lens of we do the search as well. So the advice that we're offering is realistic, tailored to the client, but we are also thinking about how to execute on it. So we're not then sort of passing it over to someone else and saying, go have fun. We're actually there to deliver on the projects as well, which is where the search and selection bit comes in. And then the third part, I was always called at school Nosy Parker. I was just way too curious. So we developed a tool, a due diligence tool, which we use for our client base, which is mainly lawyers. So we spend most of our time working with senior lawyers in law firms. And what we do is we come in as a third party and conduct a due diligence exercise where law firms are trying to hire partners or teams. That's really the product range that has developed through those difficult periods of time where clients had to make informed decisions based on shifting sands and also taking risks on growth at a time where there was much less certainty. And that's really evolved into what I'm doing today, which is essentially helping clients grow.
And when did you start Fido's?
Fido's was 11 years ago, give or take. So we started it. There were a group of us that had a very similar mindset around some of the things I was just describing. And we thought, why don't we have a crack at building a business? And so we actually we set the business up in a bar in this sort of city-based bar around the corner, and we spent a month kicking around in there. And then that's when I met you, Sarah, because that's when we came
Moved in,
and worked from your offices, and you helped us incubate.
yeah, and so that was 11 years ago. And how have you changed the business in those 11 years?
I mean, when you start, you've got a lot of energy. I think you used to call it mojo. But once you actually start trading and clients start depending on you, and you start employing people, and you grow a team, and you start thinking about the future, it takes on a life of its own. So what goes from concept and idea, and actually what I would now call a passion project, or it certainly was then.
Yes.
It reaches a degree of maturity, and then actually, the more mature the business becomes, the more immature you realize it is, because the more you know you need to do to actually get to wherever it is you're trying to go.
I think as a founder myself and somebody who's grown a business, when you start it, the business is kind of you, isn't it? And then there gets a point where you realize, like you just said, it has a life of its own and the business is a separate entity. And of course, it's always a separate entity because it's a legal structure and all of that. But when you first start, it is basically just you doing your thing. And then one day, if you're successful, you kind of look around you and go, oh, I'm employing people. The business is employing me now. I'm not the business anymore. And for me at that point, it was very much, okay, right, well, we need to professionalize certain parts of the business that we kind of let's not say winged it, Ed, but if somebody had said to me, what's your policy on sustainability, if I'm honest, in the early days I'd have probably gone, oh shit, I don't know, and gone and googled a process. But there gets to be a point where you take that stuff seriously and you just turn in it turns into a different kind of proposition, doesn't it?
I love those questions though, and I still get them where someone asks me something, and I'm like, ooh, I should really think about that, because you realize actually how much there still is to learn. But it's great when people ask you those questions, the ones where you just your mouth slightly left open, the cogs are spinning, but you know there's an answer that you should have. But
You're like,
sometimes the
think
skill
I hadn't
is,
thought of that. Well, so here we are, 11 years later. We've got Fides. How many people do you employ now?
We've got a team of 13, and then we work with several externals as well that contract with us. So on a good day, there's about 15 of us.
Fabulous. Fabulous. A fabulous growth story. Okay, let's get into some of your leadership lessons, if we may. Could you tell me about the best lesson that you've learned as a leader?
This is actually born of some of the challenges that I had, and I've sort of kind of alluded to that. When the business was founded, over the course of the first year, we actually had four directors come in to lead the business, and it was a bit of a passion project. So we all had an idea of what we wanted to do, the kind of work. But at the start, you're trying to actually create some revenue, and you're trying to work out if clients want to work with you, and survival is part of it. But if you don't have a properly formed plan at the outset, you're screwed, because once you start achieving success, you start hitting divergent ideas. Or you realize that there are many strategies that are open to you that you haven't fully tested or considered or thought about. So it can become really challenging as a leadership team, and it's impossible to communicate the message to people that want to join the business around what kind of business you are if you don't have a long-term plan. Now, it's 100% fine for plans to change. You have to be reactive and nimble. But without having a plan, you can't have honest conversations about what you are looking to achieve and where you want to get to. So when I took over, I took the business over fully in February of 2020, after a kind of a six month exit period with my former colleagues and directors, which all went incredibly well. But at that point, I had a plan. And that was the first time I feel genuinely like I've actually worked to a set plan, and there's been a true vision for the future. So yeah, I would say have a plan undoubtedly is the biggest thing that I've learned along the way.
So when you didn't have a plan, I mean, by the way, I'm loving this as a strategy advisor. Anybody would think that I've planted these answers, Ed, but I haven't. So when you didn't have a plan, how did you manage? How did you know what you were doing or where you were going or how you were going to get there?
You are, first of all, survival, but you're doing what you know well, which is, trying to sell, go out there, speak to clients, generate business, and then you're trying to make sure that you get the next piece of work and the next piece, and then you realize, oh, in order to do this, we should really have a couple of people helping us. So you do that, and then someone says, oh, have you thought about X or Y? And you do that, and you react, and you go through the motions of having a strategy, because you can talk knowledgeably about what you're doing, but actually, year in, year out, you're not working to a plan or a script. And I actually really admire people that can continue to work in that way, but I personally found it liberating to have a plan to work towards. And when I did that, this might sound very basic, someone in your world of work, Sarah, but it was thinking about the year ahead, thinking about the 3 years, thinking about the 5 years, and then making myself be bold and ambitious, and trying to really sort of force the mind to not think in a kind of risk manager mindset, but to actually find something that I would be passionate about, because a lot of my drive has really come from that, trying to build that thing that's on paper.
I find clients who come to me who haven't got a plan or haven't got a strategy are exhausted because they're constantly shifting from one place to another, trying to assess which tactical move might be best at the time. And because they don't have that vision and the objectives and the strategies to get there, they're just frantic the whole time. What should I do? What should I do? So well done, getting a plan. So now you've got a plan. Now you've got a plan. Tell me, how has that changed the way that you operate as a leader?
So I've got more direction for starters. I know what I'm trying to achieve, and some of that does not come overnight. So you're relying on others and developing people and pivoting the business towards whatever it is that you're driving towards. So for us, we had to totally overhaul our internal structure to create what we were working towards, which was trying to create an academy style approach to what is a very complicated end of the search market that is typically dominated by very senior experienced people. So in order to do that, we needed to change the way we train. We hadn't really done much of that before. And then we needed to become more data-led so that the people working for us had, strong foundations to stand on. And then we had to develop products that we could replicate so that we had consistency. And then we had to get everyone to really buy into that notion, because it meant people were joining a very different business to what our competitors looked like. And so you just have to work it back through, and it fundamentally changes every decision you make, because rather than thinking short term, and you should be reactive, you should be able to seize opportunities when they come, but you need to work towards some sort of a strategy that everyone buys into. And then we put fail safes in place. So I really do buy into this idea of planning, and I make it a ritual. So it's an annual thing that's then reviewed monthly and quarterly. But I've made that part of everybody's role. So it doesn't matter what role you have within the business, everybody is tasked with planning. at the end of the calendar year, and we afford 3 weeks of preparation for that. And then everybody presents their plan, the entire team. And after they've done that, we're all invested in each other because the business is here to serve its clients, serve its people, hopefully to have an impact on the world that we're in. But at the same time, everyone should be using it as their leverage for whatever they're trying to achieve in life. And actually, by talking about the plan, what you're trying to achieve, and thinking about what you want to get out of the next year and the years to come, and telling your colleagues what that is, you are letting people in, and you also end up crowdsourcing because they help you, and they help you deliver on your plan. And then the next year, when you write it and you realize, this was right, that was wrong, this could have been done differently, you also learn a lot from the experience of becoming better at planning.
I've just written down strategic crowdsourcing because I think this is a brilliant concept. So just the idea of a community of colleagues sharing their strategies and getting buy-in from their colleagues, rather than a lot of organizations that I've worked in, especially the bigger ones. Everybody's just fighting each other for a little bit of extra space or a little bit of extra authority or a little bit of extra power. And people are stepping on each other to get to the top. And your model, strategic crowdsourcing, as we've now called it, Ed, is, I mean, it just seems like a far more sensible approach, doesn't it? Everybody, there is enough space in the world for everybody to do well. You don't have to trample over.
Absolutely. And do you know what, Sarah? So this came, I would say, part by accident, but so from 2020 to 2023, the big cultural piece that we were trying to develop here was teaming. And when you work in sales, any sales team is based or dominated by individuals, individual habits, individual behaviors.
Meet your
And
individual target.
it starts with individual targets and me and I, and it's never we and us. So we've pushed the idea of teaming in everything that we do, and it's even in our structure. So we have researchers, delivery consultants, and consultants all working together on every project. So you have to team in order to be successful. But as an individual, you're also responsible for driving your own success and the success of the business. So I think by focusing on teaming, you can only properly team if you know what your buddies, your colleagues, your peers, what they're actually looking to achieve. And if you know what they're passionate about, and what they're trying to get out of that year, or where they're looking to develop their skills, or the kind of work they really want to learn to be able to do. That's how you team really well. So it's kind of come from teaming that we've got to this place. And I wouldn't say it's perfect.
You've turned
Pardon?
it into a verb. So rather than a noun, you've turned it into a verb. We are teaming, as opposed to
I was
teaming.
never great at grammar at school,
Oh
Sarah,
no,
so I'm glad that
terrible.
I've achieved something linguistically.
You've done two things. Now it's a new concept of strategic crowdsourcing, and you've created the new verb teaming.
Wait, that's going to help the ego today, isn't it?
Overachieving, Ed, overachieving. Right, tell me about your, right, let's just put you down a peg or two. Tell me about the hardest lesson you've.
So there have actually been a lot of really tough ones I've cocked up on many occasions, and I think that is actually a really important piece of the puzzle, right? You don't get from A to B. It's not a straight line road. Different things happen at different times, and I think the single biggest thing is that you can go in and do any try and achieve anything you want to achieve with other people, but things can change, and people's priorities can change. You can have a great leadership team 1 minute, and then the next minute people want to do other things. You have to be adaptable, and you have to prepare for that change. So I think one of the hardest lessons is that when you work with people, which is what most people do, is you really need to learn to adapt to changing priorities. For me, that's been a big learning curve. You know, I went from having there were four directors running the business to now it's just myself as managing director, and that was a kind of a big learning experience. But the way that I've countered that, and one thing that's been really valuable for me, is when I spoke to my mentor back in 2019. And I said to him, what should I do about this quite big transformation? And he said, Ed, you're not alone. You're not alone, and you'll find people that will still want to help you and will want to work with you. And he gave me this idea that actually, being a good leader is about where you source the right advice, where how you make your decisions, but it's also the network that you have around you to pull on to try and help make good decisions. And through that, I developed a really good network of people that support me in different ways, so that I can do what I need to do. So I have a fantastic mentor. I've had several mentors at different times, but then I've got a very good peer network of other business owners that run business, face similar challenges, and there's a whole host of other things that I've put in place to sort of help fill that vacuum. Because one thing I was super worried about is not having or going becoming a business that was led by groupthink, where decisions are made by one person, and actually I think that's a recipe for disaster. It's great to have clear decision making, but you need to make sure that your decision making process is executed in the right way, and sharing, bringing other people into the fold, and again, crowdsourcing ideas and things. That's been really helpful. So I think the biggest lesson is that, people do change, but it's important to be resilient. And then when you do take on a role as a leader, you need to find a way to making good decisions if you're the person that's having to make those decisions on their own.
I remember years and years ago, I got sent on a course to Pennsylvania, Wharton University in Pennsylvania. And the course was a negotiation course. And I have never been in sales. And I remember thinking, I don't know why my boss is sending me on this negotiation course. And I got there and I was like, all right, now I get it. Because I was at the time in my career, let's say truculent. I was a bit, no, this is the right way to do things. So we're doing it that way. And I was in an environment where I was a bit of a square peg in a round hole anyway. Anyway, I had this total light bulb moment on this negotiation course when somebody said, people do things because that's what they want to do. Now that sounds so obvious, but I realized that if you understand people's motivation, then you will probably get to a better outcome. Very few people are trying to do a bad job. Most people are trying to do a good job, but a good job as defined by their own parameters or belief set or their own objectives or whatever. And when I realized that if I could just try and understand why people were doing things in the way they were doing or why people wanted to achieve what they wanted, which was different to mine often, then we could probably negotiate our way through and get to a better outcome. Honestly, it was one of those life-changing things. And it was probably 20 years, maybe more, 20 years ago now, but that stayed with me, that different people have different motivations, and if you can understand theirs, you'll probably get to a better outcome.
Yeah, and it's when you start a business, your thought process is, as I was saying earlier, survival. You want to create sales, whatever you need to do. But a business is, you either sell them, you either hand them over, you close them, or you leave other people's other people take them on, or you keep them running. You set up other, but there's always something that happens. It's not an endless line, and what you don't always prepare yourself for is what that next thing is. And I think people can get really lost in not knowing what's coming next. You become almost beholden to a business because you have to keep it going, and you can't get off of that treadmill. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I think that is a reality. And I think, when you are going into business either with others, or you're trying to bring people into your business, or you're thinking about the future of your business, if you ask yourself the question, what if I wasn't here? What would it look like? How would we structure it to survive beyond my input? If I wasn't here, how could we improve it? If I am here, what can we do? You have to think about those scenarios, but I don't think you're really taught or encouraged to think about that at the outset because it's almost too much. It blows your mind. You're like, I've got to build the business and I've got to work out how I'm going to leave it. But people do want to come and go, and they do want to leave businesses. And you might want to leave your own business at some point and feel like, someone's got to take it on and do it differently. But these are the things that I think become a reality, when you've been doing it for over a decade. If you haven't faced that, you're probably really lucky. But at some point, it will come up.
How have you learned that? You seem to have a really strong questioning view. I suppose it's back to this nosy Parker thing of, but it's I think it's I don't think it's usual. I don't think every leader has this kind of critical, in a constructive way, a constructive critical view of their own business. How have you learned to keep doing that?
I haven't recognized that as something's different. So I just assume that other people would think about that. I wish I'd thought about it more, actually, because it makes you think, what value do you bring? How can you bring more value? Where else could you insource value from? But it helps you also think about the long-term planning around your team. The roles that you want them to have, the skills, like what you were saying, your boss shipping you over to the US, they must have felt that was a skill you needed because they were invested in where they wanted you to be. Yeah. So I think by thinking about these things, it's that you become better at giving people direction and supporting them with the direction that they're on. But you need to think about all the scenarios, and you don't have to have a perfect answer, and you might change your answer, which is totally fine, but you need to think about them because they become a reality at some point. And that's when it's nice to have a head start and to have given it a bit of time.
Tell me about your mentor. That's another thing. It sounds like you get a great deal of value from having a mentor.
Yeah, so I've had quite a few, actually, and not all of them have known that they are my mentor, but I've picked people. So I wrote a post a while back about selecting mentors and making sure you have them. You've got lots of different types, but there's some that are the sort of involuntary mentor that you just take whether they like it or not. And the most impactful one that I've had at this stage of my career was actually someone I interviewed with. And it was before setting up Feeders. I was interviewing to go and join a few other businesses. And he was my competitor. I just looked at and thought, that's the one I want to be like. This guy's awesome. I can learn so much from him. But I didn't actually want to work in that environment. There was something about it. I felt I could get to where I wanted to be quicker if I did it myself. But he has been a mentor for me for over a decade now, but we actually work together. So the relationship has evolved, and now we partner on projects. And we carry out some of the strategic work on the consultancy side together. And it's just one of the best things that's happened to me is you know, having someone that supported me along the way, but now I'm actually able to work with as well. But have a mentor or have multiple mentors. It's really important. I'd say my mom is a mentor. You know, she's brilliant to me. You know, you have to have these people that you turn to at the right time that get you and are also prepared to stand up to you as well and say, you know, no.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that this blend of formal and informal mentors is really useful because everybody has different frameworks that they operate by and different things to give, don't they?
Yeah, and pick the people. You know, we have an internal program where you know everyone gets assigned a mentor when they join, which I think is really important. But I encourage the guys and girls to go out and get mentors, you know, in the outside world, because there's only so far someone within your organization can take you, and you want to bring in external influences. So it's really valuable. And there's nobody that can't take on a mentor. There's no one doing anything that can't learn something else from someone. And you just learn a lot from speaking to other people and sharing ideas and challenges and being honest about the things that you're finding hard.
And I think that safe space to be honest is important, isn't it?
Yeah, trust.
Yeah, trust and allowing yourself to be honest with other people and not pretending that everything's fine, I've got this, I know everything. I mean, that time when you kind of admit to yourself and to others that you need a bit of help somewhere is, I don't know, I think the first time that you do that as a leader, it's scary, but it's also empowering because then you're on a journey of accepting that you can just ask other people for help.
Yeah, and they want to help as well. And some of the best things come from, you know, sharing a problem, right? You know, you just by talking about it, you actually learn a lot. Just by articulating what you're trying to do, why you're trying to do it, yeah, it starts to crystallize in your own mind, and then you get better at solving things.
You know what we could do, Ed? Should we set up a kind of leadership sharing a problem forum?
Yeah.
Let's do
You'd be
that.
inundated though, Sarah. There's just so much to do. You're gonna have to, yeah, that's a great idea. I mean,
All right. You and I
I'd
can
love
do
to be
that.
part of
Okay, side hustle, sidebar, we'll do that. Okay, right, back to the plot. If you had to tell other people in the same position as you, if you had to give them one piece of advice, a single piece of advice, what would it be?
The piece of advice that I give everyone is have cold showers. You know, that's
What?
it. So four years ago, I was sat on a beach in Abu Dhabi, Abu Dhabi, and I was looking at these body mechanics, life hacks, health, anything you can do. So cold showers is the thing that I tell everybody to do. But the bit that I would genuinely do, if you're in a similar position to me, or you're thinking about setting up a business, or if you're already running a business, is trying to appreciate yourself for what you're doing. Because if you think about it, and I've got friends that run businesses that didn't make profit in their first 5 years. And they've built an amazing business. I've got a friend that's built an exceptional cyber business, and I actually don't know how long it took them to make profit, but I know it was a really difficult road.
Ideas, right?
And but now where they are is, you know, beyond where I ever imagined it. I don't know if they imagined it or not. So certainly, you know, things can take time. And what you have to do is make sure that you're praising yourself, that you're finding ways to either celebrate or recognize the steps that you're taking. And I say that because actually not everything goes right, and you get a lot of things wrong. And people talk a lot about failure and growing through failure and things like that. But I think that's all well and good, but you need to recognize the successes that you're having. And it's really important to acknowledge that, because otherwise you fail to recognize all the great things that are happening You know, you could sit down with your accountant. I've got a wonderful accountant. I love him to bits. He's a really good friend. I would endorse him to absolutely anybody. But you can sit down with your accountant and you can be like, wow, okay, that's a year and we've literally achieved nothing. Or you could sit down with your accountant and you could find a way to say, well, hang on, that was incredible. We've achieved another consistent year. You have to find ways to enjoy the journey that you're on, because otherwise, 10 years passes you by and you're like, what have I done? But
It's all in
no,
the training.
So I think making time, making sure you recognize the achievements that you're making and find opportunities to say well done,
I love
because that spurs you on.
that.
For a lot of particularly business leaders that I've got to know, they have a huge amount of energy and impact in their business, but they sometimes fail to recognize just how much they've done. And when you sit down with a friend or a colleague and they tell you what they've been doing, often you'll think, wow, how has this person done that? And they're just talking about it as if it's normal. And I think take a minute, praise yourself.
Can we just circle back on the cold showers? Is this a metaphor? Is this like chill your beans, or is it an actual take a cold shower?
No, the cold shower is really cool. You've got to do that if you're not trying it. I actually, I've been doing that now for 4 years.
Do I though? Do I?
And there's a great speaker, Penny Mallory, who was the world's first female rally champion. I went to one of her talks. She's really inspiring, but she talks about resilience and mental toughness. And one of the key things that she says in her talk is take cold showers. And I was like, oh my God, I take cold showers. I love that. And it really does help. So, it's good for your health. It's good for so many different things. But that's what I say to everyone. So I was just saying it jokingly, because if you spend a lot of time with me, you realize I talk about that and cutting out sugar way too much. But yeah, no. The more serious one is learning to sort of praise and recognize the actions.
So what next for Ed?
Well, we're at a pivot at the moment. So 5 years is almost done, and we had a 5-year plan. And at the moment, we're just looking at that plan and reviewing it. And in 4 weeks' time, so as a team, we're getting together, and the whole business is collaborating on this next 5 years of plan. So everyone's been put into different groups and they're presenting different scenarios. Several of those scenarios are international growth. One of them is diversification. So moving into a different but very nice looking business line that could sit next to us, and growth. So I'll have a better answer for you in a few weeks' time. But the first 5 years has gone incredibly well of this new chapter, and I'm really pleased to say that we've achieved pretty much everything that we set out to achieve in that time. So now I'm trying to push myself to be bolder, to think bigger, and then to think how we can do things quicker. So that's what's next. But I wouldn't be surprised if we had another office in the next 6 months. And I wouldn't be surprised if we diversified the business somewhat in that time. And I wouldn't be surprised if we grew by about 30% in the next sort of 12 to 18 months. So those are all things that are there, but we are just in that planning phase, Sarah. So give me time.
You know what, Ed? I would not be surprised if I was going to back anybody to grow by 30% and get another office, you would be one of the people that I'd be backing.
Ah, thank you. Well, let's hope I do it. I don't want to let you down.
You won't. I know you won't. You have been an absolute gem. I love talking to you. We could be here all day. Maybe we'll organize our little side hustle, our solve a problem leadership forum.
Love it.
Why don't we come back and do this again when we've done that?
Sounds great. And Sarah, keep doing. I loved your podcast. I watched it earlier today. That was brilliant with Simon, and he's super inspiring as well. What an
The
exciting guy. So if anyone's listening to this and you want to listen to a better one, then go and listen to that because that was really, really good. I can't
all
believe you set up an airline. I
I
mean, what a
know, I
guy.
know. All of my guests are fabulous. You are handpicked. You are all handpicked for a reason. You're all amazing. Right, I'm going to go and set up a new business now.
Dear
I'll speak to you
Sarah,
later. Thank you, Ed.
thanks.